Actually, I have to find a child bride for some of these young men here. They're underage, I don't know, it's legal. Anyway, I was asked by the Choshev Hasanim to talk a little bit about how do you run a house. Not so simple. So we're going to focus on the kitchen and discuss some of the basics. And please feel free to ask any questions at any time. First thing to do is make sure the food in the house is kosher. Let's start with that. It's not a simple matter. Not everything that is supposed to be kosher, is alleged to be kosher, is really kosher. There are numerous butcher shops in this country that say on it busser kosher, but it really means busser. It's no semblance of real, honest to goodness kosher. There are very lax standards and so many things, and you just can't buy there. You have to know what the proper standards of kashrus are before you buy products and bring it into your home. There are numerous standards. Glatt kosher is a necessity, not because it has to be glatt, because it has to be kosher. If it does not advertise as glatt kosher, you can't assume it's kosher in the first place. That's just the reality of the world in which we live. I'm not going into the lumdus right now, I'm just going to the facts. It has to be glatt kosher, and even within glatt kosher, it has to be a reliable supervision. There are many reliable supervisions. To my knowledge, just about every single vada rabbonim is reliable, because it's generally speaking based upon non-for-profit systems. The rabbis don't pocket the money, and therefore there's not that kind of an incentive to have substandard products. Of course, there are standards and standards. Higher and not as high, but absolute, not things which you wouldn't consider kosher is hard to find if you look for it in any kind of a public vad. Private supervisions are somewhat more suspect because it's a profit motive. People want to make more money. So there's always it's always dangerous. My son told me he's reading Rabbi Ravadia's biography. He was a rabbi in Mitzrayim. Cairo or something like that, wherever he was, and the shochnim put a gun to his head, literally wanted to kill him, because he was strict with the meat. We mentioned about the Rizaz in Chicago. They had to run away for his life in the middle of the night, because he was too strict with the meat, and the mafia didn't like it. So you understand very well, when it's profit motives, it becomes problematic. Okay, so there are numerous, very reliable shchitas that you're allowed to buy from. I'm not going to enumerate. We assume that the Hasidic shechitas are okay. The OU is fine, and OU is usually piggybacking on somebody else these days. Whatever, there are Rabbi Heinemann shechitas considered to be fine, and others as well. Okay, so once you got past the meat, that's the most sensitive product of all. And then there are other products that have to be sure that they're kosher. Take fish. So fish, what could be wrong with fish? You know, what could go wrong? You're right, nothing can go wrong as long as it's a kosher fish. So we have to make sure it's a kosher species, and there are fights about that also. What the level of hashkacha has to be at, hashkiach tmidi, could we just assume that whatever is marketed, for example, as tuna fish, is tuna fish. So these days, there's a fairly strict standard, so any tuna fish, which numerous brands have OU or equivalent hashkachas, coming in the cans, we're assuming they're okay. If you're buying fish separately, you're at a fish store, you should try to go to a kosher fish store. In the olden days, when there were no kosher fish stores, people would go to regular fish stores, make sure they cleaned off the knife, and made sure they saw the scales. Okay, that's if you have to do it, that's still okay, but most communities today of any size, even Riverdale, which is a small community, has a kosher fish store. We should try to help people to patronize these stores. Okay. What else could be treif? Wine. Oh, wine is easy to be treif. Wine is stam yenem. You have to make sure the wine is kosher. I recommend you buy yayin mevushel. The reason for buying yayin mevushel is in case someone touches the wine who shouldn't be touching it, it should not become problematic. So therefore, just many wines say yayin mevushel. Now, people want fancy wines. Some of them don't come mevushel. There's a wine... I should say, expert in my shul, we started talking about mevushel. Mevushel takes the guts out of the wine. Maybe the wine had guts, but apparently if you're an expert, you do. So I still recommend the old-fashioned, we knew when everyone, the Yain Revushal, it's just safer that way. Okay, what else can be treif? Well, dairy products. So dairy products, many posts can rely on Igros Moshe and many others who say that there's no issue of Cholav Akum in America because the United States government is strict in its inspection, so it has the status of Cholav Yisrael, because the Israel is relying upon the government to make sure it's really coming from a cow. Those who are stricter, then they have a different position. They will only drink milk which prints on the side, Chol of Yisrael. Well, which, you know, there are different standards of how you do that as well. But I'm assuming that we're going to rely on Rav Moshe's psak. According to Rav Moshe, it applies to cottage cheese as well. It's another tshuva he has. American cheese, a different story. You have to have a reliable supervision. OU has many cheeses, and there's Breuers and many others. So you have to be careful not to buy these kind of hard cheeses without a proper supervision. Okay. Yes. No, because if it's hard cheese, it requires something which is called rennet to harden it. And the rennet used to be, in the old days, coming from a non-kosher source. So they made a low plug, according to many poskim, that you shouldn't have any hard cheese, even if you know it's coming from a kosher sauce. The rennet. Fine. So then there's the issue of bugs. That's a whole long story. So don't bring bugs into your house. Sometimes they come against your will. They don't need a passport, these bugs. Somehow they're hardly visible. So you have to, the Torah prohibits eating bugs. That's a fact. No one permits that. However, there are many situations where if we don't see the bugs, we're not required to worry about them. If it's what we call a mir she'eno matzui, the chances that there's bug in what you're eating is small. How do we define small? Less than 10%. So Mishkanes Yaakov says she'eno matzui. 10% of what? So it's a machlokes. You buy a head of lettuce, so you have to, what's the measuring unit? Some say it's a whole head of lettuce. You have to measure, there's less than 10% chances of one bug in the entire head of lettuce. Some say it's a serving, whatever the typical serving of lettuce is. And some say you should measure each and every bite separately. I take bite number one, less than 10%. Bite number two, less than 10%, etc. So I thought the last position was correct, which is a very lenient position. It's so lenient that Reb Shlomo Zalman, when he argued for the first position over the second, said, if you can hold the second, you might as well hold the third, which is ridiculous. So I was zeicha to a reductio ad absurdum of Reb Shlomo Zalman. So also a madrega. But I thought that was Pashim Shat that way. But again, just the different opinions. There are many, many books now out about bugs and movies and all kinds of things. And there is a UN cry about bugs. I'm not from the big bug machmirim, so I don't think there's necessarily a 10% chance in any particular bite there's going to be a bug. And therefore, there's more room to be lenient. Grade A lettuce, iceberg lettuce, is assumed to be generally bug-free. We wash it, we look a little bit, but they don't have to go through very arduous inspections. Now, there are some fruits and some vegetables that there are those who claim that they're infested with bugs. They're all over the place. So I say, fine. If it's all over, just throw it out. Don't ever bother eating it, because you're never going to get everything out. But unless you show me it's infested, I don't believe it. And a lot of things, they say, strawberries you can't eat. I've asked people who are in charge of inspecting strawberries for the kosher supervision. They're paid money to sit all day and check for bugs. You ever find any bugs? No. So again, I don't know. I'm sure those who have different points of view. The strawberries, you cut off the top, which has the green thing on top, and you rinse a little bit. Okay, we do that anyway, as a rule. So I'm not for the big machmirim and bugs, but those who have a more strict view are fine. In New York City, you have a problem with bugs in the water. Copepods. In my opinion, there's room to be made on this shaila, because the copepods are fundamentally invisible. For 50 years, no one saw them, even though they're really there. They were discovered by accident. Someone ordered bug-free lettuce from Gush Katif, and they found bugs on it. So they called to complain. It says, it can't be. It must be the water. Sure enough, it was the water. But it would have gone 50 more years. No one would have discovered it. So, and the average cup of water, the average drink, you know, what's a serving of water? A gulp. You know, you take, it's in your mouth and you stop. So what's that, a few ounces? You're not supposed to have so much in one shot, right? It's called Chazal Derech Eretz. You have a cup, 3 ounces. I'm not sure how much do you have at one time? A revius. A revius is 2.5 ounces. So something, whatever the amount is, you do a little arithmetic and you find out there's a chance of there being a copepod and that small amount is not necessarily more than 10%. Plus, you can't see them. They're not visible to the naked eye. Even though they're not microscopic, then there's some nothing. They're macroscopic, but they're just not visible. That's a reality. As I said, for 50 years, no one saw them and still no one sees them. I'll ask you. You live in New York City. Have you ever seen a bug on the water? Has anyone in this room live in New York? I live my whole life in New York. I never saw a bug on the water. It is true. You take a rag and you put it on the bottom of the faucet and you gather. You took the rag, put it in some water, so you'll see some something or other, which may be a copepod. Okay, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a mir tamatzui. And there are not, according to many posts in Prichodesh, there's no chiyuv to use these sophisticated straining procedures which can get the bugs out. There's various filters, etc. They're not mechuyev. Okay, so many of us have it in our homes, and especially in public institutions, you see filtered water. But in my view, it's not an absolute requirement. Okay, what else can be coming and transferred to the house? Yes?
But is there a difference between the sensitivity to bugs in America as opposed to
Israel? Yeah, in Eretz Israel, there's much more infestation because they don't use some of the things that we use here in America. We used to have much more powerful agents that they outlawed, DDT, etc. But even today, we have some stuff they don't use there. And therefore, there are some, I think in Eretz Israel, they say you have to sift the flour because there's bugs in the flour. In America, I don't know, who's ever seen bugs in flour in America? Yeah? No question. So again, we don't see it. So if we don't see it, I don't think you're required. So I suppose it's a different standard. Yeah?
A lot of these bugs, like situations, like vegetables and stuff, I mean, maybe to us, like we might not be able to see it because we don't know what we're looking for, but like, let's say experts, they would be able to see it. So does that make
First of all, it doesn't matter. The Torah wasn't given to experts, it was given to people.
Right. What are we looking for, though?
Let me know what you're looking for. I'm not mochiyuv to know what I'm looking for. We have Baruch Hashem given a good vision. We don't see anything on the vegetable, so it's not visible to the typical individuals. That's just suffice. Yeah.
If you are not good with filter, which is your job, is that your
work? I think a lot of filter on Shabbos, even if you hold the filtering, is required based on the chayodim. So it's okay. Those are going to drink it that way. It's not a problem. It's before chayodim. Okay, what else do we leave out about bringing things which are into the house which are not kosher? I'm trying to think through my head. What else am I leaving out? What?
Shviyis.
We're not going to discuss Mrs. Clear Sparks. This is for Americans. And although the truth is, that's true. You have Tevel coming in from Eretz Israel, and it's supposedly Shviyis. Israeli products have to watch out for. Okay, I'm not against the safety. That's right. That's have to be careful. So Israeli products for shvius and trumas and maestros, good. It's correct. So you have to figure out what to do. If you buy Israeli products, you have to be mafresh. There was a specific text found in the Art Scroll Siddur. It's about this big. You can either memorize it or read it from the Siddur itself. And if you don't have the patience for either, you'll have to say, Kol hafroshos v'apidyonos Yachulu Kedas Kenusach Atzko. And that's an incorporation by reference to that particular Nusach. What's Pidyonos? This is called Meiser Sheni. This year is a sixth year of the cycle. Whatever goes this year, Meiser Sheni. Meiser Sheni, we have to do, we're not going to take it to Shalim anymore, with Tomei, etc. So you have to be pulled on a coin. What coin? Where coin? Who coin? You can use my coin. I have a coin. I have a coin in my shul. I will say after a while, my coin's going to run out. All my friends are using it. I have a perpetual motion machine. I have two coins. It goes to one, and then it fills up, goes to the other. So I can set it up twice every 7 years. I was actually in the MTA. They got me there, but I wasn't holding up the. One of my friends was, and put me in jail for this, defacing U.S. currency. They took a were there? I was at the MTA camp lab. Yeah, we took a dime. Or whatever, what was that?
It was a dime. There's some dime. Great pictures.
Yeah. It ultimately it disintegrated into the hydrochloric acid in the chem lab. Took a while. Yeah. Chodosh. Ooh, I didn't think about that. It's Chodosh. That's right. Those who hold from Chodosh in Chutzlarts, which is not the practice of Ashkenazim, have to worry about that too. New grain. Very good. Minhag Ashkenaz has always been for hundreds of years to follow the opinion of the Rabbeinu Baruch and Azarua, that there's no issue of Chodesh and Chutzarts. It's made a comeback recently. When I was young, almost no one kept the issue of Chodesh in America. Now it's become, we live in an age of Chumris, it's become much, much more popular. Everything you buy now says on Chodesh, Yoshin, I should say. And, okay, those who follow Chumra too. Once we talk about what's on the thing, you have the problem of Pas Akam and Bishal Akam. That can come in treif. In other words, you bought it in the store, it's cooked by a goy. So now you're thinking everything says Pas Yisrael on it. Pas Akam is mutter if it's coming from a palter, from a professional. So that's no problem anyway. But Bishul is a problem. So the kashrus organizations have to worry about make sure it's Bishul Yisrael. There are different stands for Asram and Ashkenazim somewhat. We learned this a couple of summers ago here in camp. How long is that? No one remembers? Is that long already? Some years ago. You remember Bishul Akam in Camp Marisha? Not in the last 5 summers? Wow, the years go by so fast.
Not in the past 7.
Not in the past 7 summers? Wow.
We
have 10?
9 years ago.
9 years ago, okay. To me, it feels like yesterday. Okay. It feels like yesterday. The years go by. The whole summer about these topics. And, there are ways out. It's Eino Shulchan Melachim, or it's Nechel Chai. Those are the two major issues every day. Perhaps apply to canned goods. But that's another. Okay. What else? What else is about? I'm talking about make a tray before it walks into the house.
Movies.
Okay. But we're just going to the kitchen now, not discussing any other rooms. anything else? That's what I can think of. Okay. So the first order of business we just described is make sure the food when it comes through your front door is kosher. Fine. Once you've achieved that, you've gotten most of the way home, you don't have to worry about possible chalav. That's what I have to worry about. It's only one of the 613. Okay. Basa b'chalav. Basa b'chalav, there's also Vashak Adi b'chalav 3 times. Yisra Achila, Yisra Ana, Yisra Bishul. We're, of course, focused primarily on the Yisra Achila. Yisra Achila medaraisa, Basa b'chalav is only if you literally cook the milk and the meat together. And it's only red meat. Minat Torah. There's nobody here that I know about who's going to take red meat and milk and cook the meat and the milk, and then eat it to boot. So there's no one here I know who's ever violated the Issa of Los Savashik Diba Chalevimo, either in cooking or in eating. But the Rabbanim were very, very machmir when it comes to Basa B'Cholof, in terms of trying very far to stay away from a potential violation. This is something which... I know I gave shiur on this last year in the yeshiva, and I spent a whole long time on these inyanim and basa b'chalav, and obviously we can't discuss all of the halachas in particular in a short period of time, but just a couple of highlights. The most famous din is you have to wait 6 hours. That everybody knows. You have to wait 6 hours from the time you finish the meat to the time you start the milk. That's how we pass on the halacha. Those who are more makil have different shiurim, 3 hours, 1 hour, all kinds of other shirim. Those who are more machmer, even ironically, the Aruch HaShulchan is the biggest machmer. That sounds a little bit unusual. You have to wait 6 hours from the end of the fleishig meal to the beginning of the milchig meal, which can add easily an hour in our world. So generally, you don't accept that either. So when you finish the meat, look at your watch. And then you can start the next meal with the parva stuff. And then when you want to eat the milk, look at your watch again. It's your 6 hour gap. Okay, there are those days, 5 and a half, 5 and a bit. This is I can't chastise those who rely on these things, but really 6 to 6. That's what we should try to keep that halacha. So that's I think the most famous din. Okay, but there are many other dinim which are found in the Chazal. Yes.
Actually, in
Kiryat,
the gap between lunch and dinner. Would not a lot of times be 6 hours.
I'm not here to Pascha for Caribbean. I'm
Pascha. Are we able to think, The yeshiva has that rule.
I'm not telling what rule they should have. I'm discussing what we're discussing about over here. Here, there's always 6 hours between Fleshiks and Milchiks, and it's not a problem. Other places have different minhagim. I respect every minhag. The Dutch can wait 1 hour. That's anyone here from Holland? Too bad. So, anyone who keeps 3 hours here?
Yeah.
Your father's from Germany?
My grandfather was a Baal Tshuva as a child in Berlin.
In Berlin? It's a good place to do tshuva. Berlin. Except to the minhag of the customs. Okay, very good. Anyway, so that's a famous din. There are numerous other dinim. There is the halach, you're not supposed to have meat and milk on the same table. A couple of people, after I asked mechila, twice I quickly got people off my table on Matzah Shabbos. I was on the milchika table. I asked twice, people came up with cholent and with cold cuts. I said, what am I still getting so excited about? I'm saying, so impolite. Don't put your stuff on this table, because that's what the Chachamim said. You're not supposed to be eating on a table when this flesh looks on the same table. So I just there were plenty of other tables. I think we had the only milchika tables right there. Everyone else eating flesh, you had to come on my table. So we just told them, go find the other tables. I hope I didn't offend anybody. In fact, I asked mechila. There are leniencies if someone's using a tray, but in this case, the stuff is mamash on the table. So I think the kokos were literally on the table, and the shalom and the plate on the table, both of which are insufficient. Just 1 second, please. Hello? Good. Bye. So I interrupt. This is my Torah web business. Torah web, I just put out this. Where's Daniel? I don't know if he's here. He typed it out for me to get out, and now I'm just finding out that there's an unscheduled Torah web conversation by Rabbi Meir Tversky Shlita.
It's never a good sign. I haven't seen it.
No, it's all about the war in Israel. That's what I wrote about. Mm-hmm. And last week, my wife told me about Rabbi Rosen's wife. She said, send it all. We'll have a trilogy. I'm sure mine is the shortest. So, we'll see. Okay, so I'll try to get it typed out. Ask Daniel to type it for me. We'll have all three. It's part of our be mishtatev in the tzara shel klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. Good. Back. So we said before this, the same table should not have milchiks and fleshiks. This is very important. If there's a tray, separate tray, separate tablecloth, something in between. There are certain leniencies. It's a whole siman of Shulchan Aruch. We have a shaila here in camp, but it's not so pashut. They put out bread for some reason and fleshiks and meals on Shabbos. I don't know why they do that. No one's eating bread. They're eating challah. For some reason, they put out bread. They want to know, is that bread fleshiks? It's not fleshiks mamish, obviously. But it does have a possibility that people touch it with what you call flesh of your hands and get grease on it. And if they do that, then it's a problem of having it with a milchika meal. That is a significant problem. We should really try to avoid that problem somehow or other. I don't know exactly how to overcome it. But my recommendation going forward is don't put any bread on the table for the two flesh of your meals on Shabbos. It's a job challah to go around.
What about Rav Moshe, about it not being cut up?
This is cut up.
No, if it's not, though.
That's the difference to it. But I'm assuming this mom is cut up bread. They put out you seen what I'm talking about?
What should they do to the leftover rolls?
It comes up also by
non-cut up. Wait.
It's also challah rolls by shashudas and stuff.
Challah rolls is less of a problem because we assume, although you can't assume anything really, that if you're not eating the challah, you're not touching the challah roll. You know, and guys fiddling around, I want this challah roll, I want that challah roll. Kulam ahuvim, kulam berurim, kulam kadoshim. Yes.
How about with the cutlery?
Cutlery?
Meaning with the plastic forks and knives.
What's wrong?
I've seen them.
They reuse them?
I said, who's reusing them?
No. I'm saying I've seen people use like the same box now for fleishig and milchig.
Right.
So I've actually seen on certain if you look closely certain spoons and forks actually have like I don't know if it was grease or actually.
Really? Okay. So they make a psak for the whole camp. No one has to put greasy hands to take out the plastic cutlery. It's a very good point. You should have your hands clean. Usually before the meal. Before the meal, I hope your hands are clean. In the middle of the meal, what are you putting your hands in there for? You already have your fourth spoon and eyes before. But it's a very good point. Excellent point. You should make sure not to get involved in that kind of a problem. Okay, now, yes.
Does she talk about this bread? Because I heard someone passing does she just says that if the bread is on the table with Messari, it becomes Messari and it's open?
Well, I'm saying that's exactly what I'm worried about. So you should not.
No,
should
is it only because people touch it, or is
it
because?
No, people touch it. No, that's the problem. Since we're talking about a tray for food, milchik bread. Milky bread is in Hilchos Basa B'chol, so it's Sinai. That milky bread is in and of itself not kosher. Chazam had exerts, or slash bread for that matter, you don't see it. But milky bread that we assume is not kosher, even though you find it with the Heksher, there are leniencies. Well, it's in a package, and the package says dairy, Shvacha Mises. So we should stay away from dairy bread. Now, of course, the OU has certain things which they mark dairy, but they're not really dairy, because even if there's some of these English muffins, which they have certain leniencies, because muffins, I don't know, I'm telling you, so people use muffins for hamburgers. I'm telling you, reality. So I don't go for any of those coolers. However, I'm told that whatever they give Ashkocha is batel b'shishim. So it's batel b'shishim, then strictly speaking, you don't even have it l'chadchila, I mean, strictly speaking, with a hamburger. So that, if it's batel b'shishim, we can rely upon that. Yes?
That's probably the possible kissing.
That's briskas amachu. We are making that. But English muffins are not possible to kiss. You make a motzi for sure. Okay. So this brings us to the next crisis. I kid you when it's a matter of a crisis. The OU changes designation from many products from parva to dairy. They used to have something in between called dairy equipment. They somehow abandoned that. So now you look on the cereals they have over here. They say OUD. There's nothing dairy at all, not even a half meat of dairy. Zero. Look at the ingredients. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. This is nothing. So they explain it to you. They write up in the book, this is dairy equipment. What's dairy equipment? Who cares if dairy equipment? What's wrong with dairy equipment? So if it's made from dairy equipment, it's arguable. If you want to be a machmir, you shouldn't put it into your mouth with a piece of meat. That chumra I can understand. But beyond that, I don't get it. So I have to wait 6 hours by the time you have meat, and the time you put some dairy equipment in your for a snack, I don't think it's necessary. Where did it come up? Is it called TJ Maxx? Is that what it's called? Is that what it sticks in my head? Trader Joe. Trader Joe. I'm mixing up my names. Trader Joe. I don't know what anybody retailers. Trader Joe had a parva chocolate chip product, and it suddenly changed. I got a call from someone from California 2 weeks ago, which is for camp. They had hoarded, when it changed, they had hoarded 50 boxes of chocolate chips, and they finally ran out. They ran out, and they called. The rumor was in Israel that I'm a maker of the shalom. So sure enough, we ran around and around. Yes, it's powerful. Yeah, it's part of it. What that means is you can make a chocolate chip cookies. You don't have to wait 3 hours. Excuse me. Shalom. Ma shalom harabanit. This is one of the most important people in the world, Harabanit Lapiansky. She's here. I tried to give her instructions. She said she turned right on 247. She must have gone to the world's lovey. That's what GPS tells you to do. And then she went
backward.
I told her, to make a left and then another left to come here. If I know where she is, it'll write instructions. No. If she's not there, oh man.
Rebbe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For dairy equipment thing, so we can just look at the ingredients?
Well, if you know a little bit, I mean, if you know that there are certain trademarks that are dairy stuff, you know, whey, W-H-E-Y, what's that? Sounds powerful to me. No! That's a dairy product. You know, so you have to know the basic dairy products. But, yes. That's what I'm talking about. Dairy equipment. So dairy equipment, if you want to be machmir, you should be machmir not to have it in your mouth with fleshings. But to have to wait 6 hours, I do not believe it's required.
If you took Besari knife and
ate
with it,
Malchus,
stuff like that.
Oh! Very good question. By mistake, somebody took a Besari knife and he ate milchiks. So if the milchiks is hot, too hot to touch, and the Besari knife touched the milchik product, and the Besari knife was really Besari, which means it was used for Besari in the last 24 hours, on a kli rishon, which means a kli which is or was on the fire, and now it's touching the milchika product in a kli rishon, boom. Then you have a major problem. Then the food is treif. Then the kli is treif. It doesn't happen too often, things of this nature, but it can happen. It's been known to happen. So that's a big problem. Now, obviously, the chatchila, we separate the fleshiks and milks as much as possible, and because we shouldn't make a mistake and end up in these kind of situations where we're gonna, things are going to be chalila v'chas, you know, really treif. That's a big problem. However, since these are rarities, so don't, before you throw anything out, call a rabbi, because you never know, we'll find some kind of trick up a sleeve to be matir b'dieved. There will be many cases in which you're going to tell you you have to kasher the kli, but the food is kosher, because you know food kasher is a big deal, so kasher it. But food we've tried to avoid having to throw out. Although I've had cases. Oh, one more thing is treif in the house. These days it can't get hard again anymore. Liver is full of blood. In the olden days, the livers were packed inside the chicken livers were packed inside the chickens. And the livers were sold to you, and you had to cash them yourselves. When I was a kid, my job on a Friday afternoon was to hold the liver over the fire. Usually chicken livers. Hold them over the fire, which was tzli, I'd say, you kasher livers. And then my mother said, okay, now turn it over this way. It's a goylem. I just sit there, hold it over the fire until it became kosher. Nowadays, they changed the whole system that everything is done, who knows where, in Idaho, Iowa, I should say. It's just... My name's getting mixed up. They do it far away. It's hard even to find non-kosher liver, either chicken liver or beef liver these days. It's done far away. But I still remember them kashering meat in stores in Riverdale in my time under my Ashkacha. And there was a problem of 72 hours without kashering. I had to go wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, dip it into water. Now the whole thing doesn't exist anymore. It's all taken care of, hopefully properly, but certainly far away from us. Yes. Ideally, you should have a milk counter. Flesh counter. Depends how big a kitchen is. These new rich people have big rich have kitchens that are as big as this whole thing. I mean, they're going to make separate sides. My kitchen is so small, the mezuzah is going out. That's not dollars. We learned that a few years ago, right? That we did learn. So, I mean, I have a tank. I only have one sink and I have one. Hold on. If she's lost, I'm in trouble. Oh, yeah, yeah. We can't make a rikud because it's 3 weeks, but we deserve such a gadol, we deserve a rikud. But we'll give him a kabbal upon him. Whoever sees a car coming this way.
Rav Aaron Lapansky?
Yeah, yeah. So if you see, sorry?
It was just a car coming in, pulling left, so.
No,
it's a different guy.
I assume if I have it, they said they're A building, I assume they're coming this way.
Yeah.
So if you see a car coming out, we're all going to run out and kabbal upon him. Okay. So we will have another minute to talk. What was I saying?
Separate counter.
I have a small kitchen. I have one sink. I have one oven. I have all. You know, many of the chasanim. This whole shiur is for chasanim. There are only four guys getting married, but they look like about 30 guys are in the room. I don't know what you guys worry about the kitchen for. Your mother worries about me more. Okay, the thing about marriage already apparently. Okay, very good. So, yeah.
One
count,
though. Is that a problem of having
24
hours and add water?
These are all issues that you have to talk about. I can't do everything in one shiur. So you'll tell me when I'm the next shiur and we'll talk about
microwaves.
Microwaves is another serious issue. Yep, so all those things. Yeah, all these things are serious issues. But I can't cover everything in one shiur. So anyone coming? Can you put a shomer out there? Shai, just go see if you see anything. I don't want they should miss us again. If they just yell, they'll come out. Yeah.
Is there anything other than milk and whey that one needs to be looking for in ingredients?
There may be certain things, certain casein, and certain. I'm not yet. If you go on the internet site, list of all the dairy products, all the various names, they'll tell you. I'm not any expert in kosher. You know, Rabbi Schreier will be here probably on Friday. You know, Rabbi Schreier comes down with us. He knows everything. But you'll ask him whatever you want to ask him. Yeah, related to. Yes.
Yeah, what happened
to Dunkin'
Donuts and
Wayu? Dunkin' Donuts and Wayu, all right. If you want, now it's already almost time for Myrav, I say by the bell. But if you want to discuss the Dunkin' Donuts with me at the beginning of the next year, feel free, but not right now, okay? Are we, yeah?
And is checking if it says milk in the allergy information sufficient?
I believe so. I believe if this says... You know, whenever you, if you want to know something is dairy or not, you call up, you write, email the company. Say, I'm allergic to anything dairy.
But they don't include whey, at least on the package. if it has whey, it won't say that it contains milk.
Really?
If you say you're allergic to any dairy product and they sell you whey, they're going to get sued for $1 billion. Yeah. That's impossible.
I think it says it doesn't contain milk. I don't think it says anything
that
about
does, dairy. That doesn't mean anything that contains milk. Uh-huh. You have to say, I'm allergic to dairy. Any dairy would kill me. You have to dairy. No sign? Oh my goodness.
Skunk trap.
Hold on, one second.